Welcome to another edition of the NHL Executive Suite. I'm Deb Placey, and we are really pleased to have with us the general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs, Kyle Dubas. We have a lot to talk about. So thanks so much for doing this. How was your summer?
It was great. It was much different than the previous summer. So in 2018, transitioning from assistant manager to the manager of the team, I don't think even at this point in the year you really felt like you were settled in and everything was ready to roll for the beginning of training camp or prospect tournament or whatever. And now this year, our staff has been stable. We've had very few changes to it. We've come off a season. We've already had one off season to kind of gain experience. And so it has a totally different feel, where by the middle of July, it sort of felt like everything was settled in terms of our operations. And just have a, you know, we had a few contractual matters to take care of and still one to take care of. But other than that, it's been great.
So what's better about it this way?
I just think familiarity is better. You know what to expect. You know what's upcoming. You've gone through everything once before. So you know the different benchmarks and different elements of the organization you need to have ready at different points. And you have the experience of at least doing something once. And some of these other managers have been at it for decades. So in time, we hope to get there. But it's really nice to at least have that one season under the belt and know what to expect heading into year two.
What is it like for you to be young and to be around all these managers who many of them have been doing it for decades?
It's awesome. I mean, the vast majority, if not all, have been great with me and helping me sort of learn the ropes. It's competitive. So when you're talking about transactions and various different things, they're trying to win as well. But when it comes to just, you know, learning how to go about your business and how to handle yourself, including you in different events at various different things throughout the year, like the GM meetings, and they've been outstanding. And as long as you know that you need to learn, and obviously I'm aware of that at my age and relative inexperience to them, they're excellent with helping you along the way, and that's been one of the great parts of the last year and a bit so far.
Give us a couple guys who have helped you along the way.
Well, first and foremost, Lou Lamoriello, who I know you had on last season. It was great to always listen to Lou, but he was great with me when he was in Toronto. And even though, you know, now he's gone to the Islanders and is running the show there, he still remains and it's strange to say because of our difference in age, but a great friend and mentor, and always able to pick up the phone and call him at any time and seek guidance from him, and he's unafraid to, you know, pick up the phone and call me when he thinks there's something I could be doing differently or better. And that's always appreciative on my end. The people here, just this week, like Doug Armstrong has always been, even when I was, you know, going back to when I first started with the Leafs in 2014-15 season, Doug has always been excellent at reaching out and make me feel welcome in the league. And and then when he sees my family or when they're around, welcoming them to this fraternity of sorts. So it's been a lot of fun, and it's been a great learning experience for me and getting to know these people who are, you know, you revere growing up, and you revere when you're at a different level and you get to the league and you start to see that the reason for their reverence is well-founded, because they're excellent at what they do and they're very smart in their way they operate throughout the game.
How different are you than when you first got to the organization?
Well, we personally made a lot of mistakes and errors and try to learn from them, but I would hope I'm not too different in terms of who I am as a person. You probably would have to ask people who've known me to confirm that. Some may agree or disagree, I'm not sure, but I think, you know, from arriving in the summer of 2014 to now, just learned so much. And when you operate at this level, you get the opportunity to meet people from other sports and other organizations, and you have the being in the NHL affords you the option to learn from people in other professional sports leagues and other businesses because of the brand of the NHL and the Maple Leafs, and it's easy to reach out to people and meet people, and the visibility of the team, that there's always the option to learn from people who've had great success, whether it's in hockey or different sports or business at large. And so that's been one of the great things about being here. You know, going into season six, you looking back on the things that I didn't know coming in, and the things I still don't know today, but being afforded the opportunity to learn a lot and make a lot of mistakes and learn from them has been fabulous.
Let's talk about connecting with Brendan Shanahan and now your working relationship. Did you really have a 9-hour meeting when you first met?
Oh, geez. I don't know how long it was. I don't remember what time it started. I know I was she was my fiance at the time. My wife at the time. We just got married and got back and from our wedding. And I know I didn't get home until after midnight. We were living just outside of Hamilton when I was still the GM in Sault Ste. Marie. And so I think it was at least, 8 to 9 hours that, he reached out, just wanted to come in and talk about hockey and some of the things that he had heard we were doing in Sault Ste. Marie. I didn't go in expecting it was going to be anything or would amount to anything other than building a relationship that could potentially help our team in the Sioux, being Toronto, and we are drafting and recruiting a lot of players from there at the time. And it ended up, the conversation went, and the next day Brendan reached back out again and was excited about our discussion and kind of asked what my contract situation was. And I told him, it's past July 1st, and so I don't have an out in my contract, so you're going to have to, speak to our owners. And he spoke to them, and they said, if he wants to go, we'll let him go. And so now over 5 years of come and gone, and he's my boss and sets the tone for the whole organization, and he has great experience in playing and then working for the National Hockey League, and obviously growing through his role here over 5+ seasons now. It's a wonderful resource to have. There's very few people that have those exact. I mean, there's one person in Detroit and a few others throughout the league that have, playing at that elite level and then running a whole organization or organizations at an elite level, and then, being there to sort of mentor and help along. So it's a pretty unique opportunity, and we have an excellent relationship, and I learn a lot from him and the way that he operates and try to execute the vision that he set out for the team.
Why do you think the two of you clicked?
That credit, has to go to Brendan. And I think he's a fairly open-minded person and a very curious person naturally. And
yeah, he is. He asks questions a lot. He's not afraid to ask questions.
Lots of questions all the time. And
like, what are you doing now?
Yeah. And so, that was, I think one of the key parts was that, he seemed very curious. I didn't think that was the reason for that I was being sort of called to meet with him, but in how we were doing things at the junior level in Sault Ste. Marie and how it may apply to the NHL level and different things that he could learn. I didn't expect that at all. I thought it was going to be an opportunity for me to go in and learn and ask questions, and quickly found that it was the other way around, that he was seeking ways that he could best improve the Maple Leafs and change the way that they had done things and whether I could potentially help that in time. And so I think very few people with his success as a player and his success in running the player safety department would have that mindset, in terms of growing what they already know and continue to try to change things and improve things for the better with how they operate. And he had been there, I think, in Toronto for just over 3 months at the time and had sort of gotten, his footing and understood how things went. And I think the way that he's always seeking to find what's next is really what separates him from others, and we're fortunate that we have him in the role that we do in our organization.
So let's talk about what's next for the Leafs.
Uh-huh.
So the structure was in place, really, staff for you, and you did make some changes among players.
Mm-hmm.
And you did do a lot over the summer in terms of players. Biggest deal was probably the Nazem Kadri deal.
Yes.
And it's funny, I don't know if it's certain games that I went to, but it seems every time I saw Tyson Barrie play, he was scoring.
Right. We should come to all of our games next year.
When I did look at the numbers, almost 60 points, 59 points, and the eighth highest scoring defenseman in the league. Tell us about making that deal, and then we can talk a little bit about the playoffs and how last season ended.
Sure. So when we started having discussions with teams, it was interesting. So it was very clear to us that they were seeking, there are a few things they were seeking from us. They were either looking for our younger wingers that had really come onto the scene and played well, or they were trying to bolster their group at center. And for us, that was great because we were looking to bolster the right side of our defense. But one of the major issues was that if we dealt a center, for a defenseman, we would then be weak. We would basically be plugging one hole and opening another.
Right.
And when the situation came along with Colorado and dealing with Joe, and it became clear there was a real fit there for a number of reasons, and they were looking to improve their depth at center, and they had, because of the success they've had in drafting and developing, they had an excess in D, and with Tyson as a free agent after this coming season, it just, the fit was just sort of there, that it really worked well with us and them. So they were going to bring Kadri in. He was going to displace somebody at some level for them. And so Kerfoot was the player that we focused on. They wanted Nas. And the key for us was, of course, that we were addressing our need on the right side of our defense, which was Tyson Barry. So it was really great to be able to work with Joe over the course of a few discussions to build the framework and then sort of push it across the finish line late on July 1st. It worked, and I think it was a good trade for both teams, and one that will benefit both teams now and in the future. So we were happy that it was able to work out that way. It was rarely did they go so smoothly.
Well, GMs are always looking for a top pair or D-men. I mean, is he a top two for you?
Well, the way that we look at it is we've got four guys that within our group now, with Morgan Riley and Tyson Barry, Jake Muzzin, Cody Ceci, and you know, we look at the four of them as basically sharing all of those roles inside the top four. So we're excited about that, and excited to see how that group evolves. And once, especially with Tyson and Cody both coming in, getting to know them, having them work with our development staff and then with our coaching staff, and get them on the right track and rolling. And then we'll see how it all plays out. But really, if the four of them sort of split those responsibilities and minutes evenly, we would be thrilled.
And Alex, Kerfoot went to Harvard, right?
Yes.
There's a lot of Harvard. What's the deal lately with there's a lot of hockey players in the NHL from Harvard lately.
It's interesting. I think they're obviously very talented players, but to have the ability to go to Harvard and know you're also going to play for a great development and hockey program that they're running there, it's a pretty unique offering that not many players I think that have the grades to be able to get in at Harvard.
Yeah.
And then meet their criteria for how they want to play. So it's interesting. I don't think you can ever hinder your team or do anything but help your team if you're adding highly intelligent people to the organization. And it's been clear in the 2+ months that he's been around, and really now just getting into our facility every day, he's a very bright guy, and we're excited to have him because he adds a lot to our program.
Let's put a bow on the summer by talking a little bit about the way the season ended, the playoffs.
Sure.
Sitting down to chat with you, I was thinking, for some reason, my mind goes to game 6 and not even game 7. I just remember. Because you're up 1-0. Take us back. You're up 1-0. You're at home. Mm-hmm. The crowd's going wild. It's early. What are you thinking, up 1-0?
I think it goes back to game 5. I thought in game 5, we played very well. But more importantly, I thought it showed a real growth in our group, because the game was very, very close. It was Good Friday, and the atmosphere there in Boston was unbelievable. The series was tied at 2. They had just won to come back and tie the series and bring it back for game 5. So I thought our ability in that game as a team to not get phased and rattled by the crowd, by anything else, and just stick with our game plan and stick to our process of how we want to play, really shone through for the first time in the 3 years we've been in the playoffs now. And we were able to just sort of stick with it. We didn't get phased. We didn't try to do anything risky or that not within the system, or change the way that we were playing to try to, you know, break them down for a goal. We just stuck with it. And then we were rewarded in the third period and scored twice and won the game. And so that immediately flips to Sunday. We're playing. We learned on Friday that it would be a Sunday afternoon game, and we as a team don't play any afternoon. We played the one Next Generation game every year, which is a weekday sort of novelty game, which is great for our young fans. But other than that, we don't have any experience playing afternoon games, and certainly not weekend afternoon games at home. So it's Easter Sunday, and we're trying to figure out how we're going to mitigate the distraction for the players. You know, it's a chance to win a series, which the team hasn't done in a while, and so there's the fans are very excited. It's the first time we've had a chance to win a series at home since I've been there, and even going back to when they were at least were in the playoffs in 2012 or 2013 against Boston. So there's that element of it that, and I think the fans were so hyped up, and then our team came out in the first 10 minutes and played, I thought, the best we played in the whole series. And we score to go up 1-0, Morgan Riley, shot from the point, and the crowd kind of comes unglued a little bit. We carry on the momentum, and then I thought that was where we showed sort of our relative inexperience and immaturity still. We started to get a little bit safe and, you know, throw the puck away and punt the puck away. We took a penalty. They get a bit of a fluky goal off of Ron Hainsey. It ties the game at 1. And then for the next 30 or so minutes, we just sort of stop playing the way that we have to play and the way that we're capable of playing. And they take the lead, and then we made a strong push in the third once we sort of regained our footing. And it just I thought that was our opportunity to win the series. And, you know, we learned another hard lesson that we'll apply moving ahead. But it excites me. I know everyone wants it to be easy and simple. We look and you know, you just get in the playoffs, you learn quickly 1 or 2 years. And it was interesting being in Toronto this spring, everyone focused on the Raptors and what they've done. But to say, and then we'll come up and say, you should just do what the Raptors do, you know, make a big trade, make some personnel changes, everything, and you know, go all in. And I think it's interesting because it disregards the lessons that they've learned, that they learned in 2014, 15, 16, 17, in 18,
the Raptors, right?
It's not that easy. Their own playoff disappointment. So you look at St. Louis, you look at Washington, the teams that have won the last couple of years. You can go back to Pittsburgh. You know, they won early on in their evolution as a franchise with Sidney and Evgeny Malkin and Fleury, and then it took them a while to get back. It's very hard, and there's a lot of hard lessons learned along the way. And I think it's how you learn those lessons and how you apply them moving forward, and how you react to those failures that are going to determine the future of your program. So we have another opportunity beginning on Thursday to take advantage of a season where we've got a good chance to make it very memorable.
Absolutely. Yeah. Let's talk about being an agent then. You were the youngest certified player agent. How old were you?
I think I was 20 or 21.
Right.
I think. Okay. I'm trying to remember exactly when I was certified. Either between 20 and 22 when I did that. Yeah.
Why did you do that? How long did you want to be an agent?
I had been working for the Sioux from really when I was 11 years old. I was still playing, and then I had injury issues when I was 14 playing major bantam. Fortunately, I'd been working for the team, so I just was able to work for the Sioux Greyhounds basically full time all throughout high school once I was injured.
It was concussions though, right? Tell us about that.
Yeah, just I was very undersized and I probably shouldn't have been playing up in the year, and had a few concussions during the year, and the last couple were quite bad, and was told to just kind of cool it for a bit, and so that led me to working really full time with the team, and I would, you know, go in every day after high school and travel with the team, and got to really begin learning the game inside and out that way at a young age, which was a huge amount of luck for me that they afforded me that opportunity. And then when I was leaving to go away to university, just by pure chance, our scout in that area in the Niagara region, he had quit, and Dave Torrey, who now works for LA, was the general manager of the Sioux at the time, and he said, you know, do you want to do it? You've been at our draft meetings, you've been on scouting trips, you're young, but kind of know what you're doing. So I of course said yes, and was able to do that for 4 seasons while I was in university. And near the end of my time there, I didn't think there was going to be a great position in terms of pay with the Sioux, and I started to be approached by different agents and agencies, because when you're in the rinks all the time scouting, you sort of get to know all these guys. And I elected to work with Uptown Sports because it gave the greatest opportunity, I thought, for me to have the most responsibility and not, you know, just recruit players or scout players, but to also kind of learn the negotiation and representation side of it. And so I did that for 5 years, but by the end of the third year, I realized that it wasn't for me. It wasn't really what I wanted to do. I didn't love it. You weren't really part of a team. You're representing players on various different teams.
And they get younger and younger that you have to recruit, right?
Yeah. At that time they were largely 15 or in minor midget in Ontario when we were recruiting them, or U16 in the States. And then, you know, since then, like Brandon Pridham, assistant to GM, his son is in grade 9 or just going into grade 9, and he's got players on his team being recruited by agents or that already have agents. So it's quite remarkable. And it just, it wasn't so much that I didn't love the business. I didn't love the nature of it. You weren't really judged by the job that you did, and you were judged on how loyal your clients would be, and there weren't really wins and losses. And so, right at the time where I was sort of thinking it was time to get out of that, the GM job in the Sioux opened up, and the board members there encouraged me to apply and said, you know, my chance wouldn't be great because of my age. I was 25, but figured if it's my hometown team, it means a lot to me and to our family. If I don't at least try, and if I don't put my best foot forward, I'll always regret it. And thankfully they took the chance on me at 25, and it was awesome.
Well, good chance they took. Yeah. Let's talk about why it meant so much to you.
Sure.
Though, you spent a lot of time around your grandparents, right? Yeah. Growing up, and your grandfather was a coach, right? In the 60s. Tell us about that.
It was cool growing up. In Sault Ste. Marie in the winter, the only thing to really do is go to the Greyhound game. So, it was so interesting to me when I was very young. I would go to a lot of the games with my grandparents or parents, but it was so interesting to me going with my grandfather because he had coached the team and it wasn't in the OHL yet. The OHL didn't exist. So, it was when there was just junior A hockey and not major junior hockey, and he would go to, so we would go together, and when we walked into that, we would always get there very, very early, and we would walk in and seeing all the people like rush up to him and get his thoughts on the team and get his thoughts on the opposition. And then at the old Sioux Memorial Gardens, you would kind of stand by the glass. Like there was like a moat, the first row was sort of elevated, so you can kind of stand at the glass, and we'd always watch the other teams warm up there, and all the people and the other fans or his buddies would be asking about other players and the other team, and you saw the reverence in which a lot of people held him. It was just so cool, and then you get to learn a lot from him, and watching the game and the way that the game is played and different things that would be happening. And so when, you know, it's interesting. So the general manager of the team, when he was the coach, was Angelo Bumbacco. So Angelo Bumbacco was my grandfather's boss. And then he was also, when I went as the general manager of the team, he was on the board of directors. So he was also my boss. So it's a very rare distinction to have hold somehow the same boss that your grandfather had for the same team. So that was just so cool in every regard. And then, you know, my grandfather had dementia, and so when I went back to the team, he was in a home, and then he passed away at the beginning of my second season, but he made it to one game when I was in my first season. And it's just like a memory like that you never forget, right? So to be able to do that job, and how much it, you know, my grandmother and Ron Francis's mother, like they go to the games together and sit together there, and it's really an event in Sault Ste. Marie each game. And the media coverage there, the passion that the people have, it's difficult to explain to people because I don't expect many to understand it. But it was a great teacher in terms of the pressure, the passion of the fans, the amount of criticism, the fact that fans there, everyone knows you, you're from there, your family's from there. They're very open to come up to you and tell you everything that you're doing wrong. And it's never like anything I don't think I could experience anywhere else. And it was a great educator for going to Toronto after.
Seems like, as you said those things, I'm picturing people in Toronto coming up to you and telling you exactly what they think, that they would do the same to you now, right?
I try to tell people this because everyone will say, geez, like it's got to be a lot in Toronto with the media and the fans. It is so much more. I love Sault Ste. Marie, and it was one of the great experiences. I don't think you'll never have an experience like that again, no matter what, because there's not going to be an NHL team in Sault Ste. Marie ever. But the fans in Toronto and the media in Toronto are much more positive than they were in Sault Ste. Marie.
Way.
So it was it was a great teacher that way. The fans that come up to you get the odd one every once in a while.
Really, but they're positive.
They're very positive, and like it's a big difference that way.
Interesting.
When I went to the Sault Ste. Marie, when we weren't very good at the beginning, the fans would come up and basically tell you weren't very good, and you know that, and the media would do the same.
Wow.
When we became good, it was my girlfriend, then fiance, now wife. She was like, she's seen this whole thing. she would say, when it'll be nice when the team gets good in the Sioux, because the people will just be so happy, and it, like, they'll come up and then when we became a good team, they would come up and tell you in a much more aggressive way that why the team might be good, but here's why you're never going to win. And so it was great. And it was, you grew at that time to really kind of build an immunity to it. Like even here, like different executives and different skills say, geez, like the media, it must be tough there. It's just pure fortune that that's where I'm from and that's where I worked and what I was used to when I came in, but it doesn't feel that way at all.
Well, you're well prepared for the position sure. you're in, but you also have brought some really interesting, I think, neat, different things. One mm-hmm. thing that really struck me is when I heard that when you hire scouts, you do these blind interviews or sure. blind reviews. Tell us about that and where the idea came from.
Just stole the idea from from another sport and from different...
Who'd you steal it from?
I can't say exactly, okay. But we had, going through our interview process, just in terms of general interview practices, the interview and just sitting down is I don't think the greatest way to go about things, and there are various different studies that will show that. So we wanted to have a process where we weren't just leaning ourselves towards our biases, which is people that we know, right. people that we've worked with before, people who we're friends with or anything like that. So we had some hires to make, and in order to try to eliminate that and make the best decisions for the team, we wanted to give everybody an even playing field and then have our people who are in decision making rank those people based on what we were actually asking them to do in the job, which is scouting reports, evaluate players, and project players ahead. So we, Daryl Metcalf, who's a special assistant to the GM with us, he sort of built the model, this way that that we could execute this, where people could send in everything, it would anonymize it, and we would then be able to evaluate all of the candidates without preconceived notions. And so that's the way that we did it, and we kind of went through a ranking process and just hired who we thought were the best people.
And how did it go? I mean, do you feel like you ended up hiring some people you knew?
We did. Well, so we hired, and I think that was kind of the part of it, was that one of the people we were interviewing had worked for me in Sault Ste. Marie before, Victor Carnero, and we hired him, but he was ranked at the highest of the group. So I wanted to eliminate any chance, really, for anybody, and we would do this process with any of these positions moving ahead, but really to eliminate the narrative that, well, they just hired him because he's... You know, he worked for him before, and they've got a pre-existing relationship. So we hired him, and then we hired Noel Needham based off of that that process.
Tell us about your relationship with Mike Babcock, how it's grown.
It's interesting. Mike is, I think as everybody knows, Mike has a great energy and never-ending energy. So, you know, he wants to talk about hockey all day, every day. And
Do you talk hockey all day, every
that's
day?
That's really it, yeah. I mean, it's... I mean, you, in the end, you do this because I think you love it, and he loves hockey, he loves coaching, he loves everything that goes into it. I mean, his work ethic, his preparation, you come to admire it, because you never have to worry about the team being extremely well prepared, both your team and for your opponent that night or in that series. Mike and his staff are going to have that all nailed down in every small little item. You know, he wants to talk all the time about the team, about the players. He's going to tell you what he thinks all the time, which is a much easier way than trying to guess what the coach is thinking, or if the coach is just trying to tell you what you want to hear because they're players that you brought in. And I think having gone through last year and then he and I reflecting on the year especially, it's been great to go through the summer and sort of see areas that we want to improve, what we think we do well as a GM and coach combination, what we think we need to improve upon, whether it's communication, player evaluations, different things, and then get rolling with them. So that's been the fun part. He's got a lot of experience. He's obviously one of the most accomplished coaches in hockey, if not the most. So it's been a great experience for me.
How do you talk about those things? You sit at the lake with a beer, you get to visit over the summer. What'd you do?
We've got a young family, so it's a little bit more difficult than maybe perhaps it was for him and Kenny, where their families have both grown and sort of gone on. But we talk every day, usually very early in the morning, and just kind of going over where we're at, what's happening. And then
but you talk every day this summer?
Yeah.
Wow,
yeah.
Okay.
Some weekends off, but not many. So, you know, from the day we ended to today, maybe it was 3 or 4 days with no discussion, and most of those days it was more than once per day, so it's good.
Is there some inclination as you're talking all summer to try to beat Boston because it came at the end, or how do you avoid that, or do you want to not avoid it?
I don't think we ever avoid it. The team has lost to Boston last three times they've been in the three of the last four times in the playoffs. The team has lost to Boston in Game 7, and the last 2 years in Game 7 in Boston. So I don't think it's anything. I think if you run away from it all year and then by chance you end up playing Boston again, you just sort of admit that you've ignored it the whole season. And I don't think we can build our team to necessarily just win one playoff series against Boston. I also think that we don't have to hide from the fact that, you know, that's the way it goes sometimes. You've run up against a certain team and if things go a certain way each season, you may lose to them. I think, you know, St. Louis had that with Chicago. We're going back earlier in the decade now where they, a few years in a row, had the same thing. Washington certainly had it with Pittsburgh. You can go back to other sports and go, you know, a couple decades ago now, I guess, remarkably, it's been almost 16 years, the Red Sox and Yankees. The Red Sox could never beat the Yankees, and you know, the Colts could never beat the Patriots. And if you resign yourself to the fact that you're not going to talk about it because you just want to ignore it, you don't want to focus on them, I think if it so happens that you face them, now you're also dealing with all those demons again, but you're also having to deal with the fact that if it's really nothing, why did you ignore it the whole year? It's because you have a fear of it. And so I think speaking openly about it is the best way to attack it, because it also allows our players and our staff to look back on what we would do differently and what we've learned from playing them again. The Raptors had it against Cleveland as well. That was the main one.
Who doesn't have it against Cleveland?
Yeah, LeBron is the key. So, you know, I don't think we can build our team, because we may get to the playoffs this year, and that's our goal, right? From day one, is to make the playoffs, and we may not play Boston. We may play Tampa Bay or Columbus or Montreal or Detroit or Washington, Carolina, whomever we match up against, right? And so if we get there and we play those teams and we've only built our team for Boston, we haven't done a very good job managing, because now we're, you know, Boston may not be our opponent. They may be in a different side of the bracket or just not playing against us. So I think we have to continue to build our team to the vision that we've set out for it, and continue to learn from the lessons of playoff failure, whomever they may be against, to best serve our group moving ahead.
I see that you definitely take part in a lot of what's important to you on social media and in the community. And I know diversity is important to you. Yeah. You hired Haley. Why is it important that you're surrounded by folks that don't necessarily look like you or come from where you came from?
I think that people who grow up in different circumstances or different countries or with different backgrounds or different religions or races or whatever, they just have different experiences growing up, and they think a little bit differently than the way that I may think or that the vast majority of our front office thinks. And having that diversity, not only in being but in thinking, and can only serve to help our organization, because, you know, the one time there may be somebody who, maybe it's even just diversity of thought, has a different way of solving an issue or a different way of moving our program ahead, is going to be so great for us overall. And I don't think that you can get that unless you have some diverse members of your organization. And it's not like we've gone out and said we have to hire we have to hire different people, we have to hire women, or we have to hire people from different countries or anything. We've wanted to hire just the best people, and rather than just say we're gonna not include this group, whether it's because of sex or sexual orientation or race or religion, we've just said we're just going to hire the best people. And I don't think it's anything earth-shattering at all. It's just that's the way that we want to operate. And Brendan and our organization have been massive believers in support of that. And so I think it's been great for the organization to have not just Haley, but Jack Han, Kate Bascom, on and on, that have added a lot for us.
Last thing, you're close to giving one of your players the C, new captain?
Maybe. We'll see.
You want to give us a hint?
We have a few great candidates, and you know, it's... I used to think, maybe naively so, that you don't need to have a captain. You know, people shouldn't change because of the letter that's on their jersey or if they have one or not. And, you know, lots of sports have it where they have captains, or teams don't have them for decades or centuries in baseball or whatever it may be. And hockey is the only one, it seems, where they, you know, or soccer, where they walk or they have an armband or they have some designation of their status in the leadership hierarchy of the team. And I was sort of very overt in saying, I don't, and it's a huge topic all the time. Until we do it, it'll be a huge topic in Toronto. And part of me thinks it's an easy filler if you're in journalism and you're looking at, oh, what can I do today to get things? And I'll talk about the Maple Leafs captaincy. And that's what I used to think. But going through the season last year, I started to sort of change my thinking that, and we have people who are probably deserving, and especially in Toronto, because of the fan interest and the fan support, thus there's a much larger need in it from a media standpoint, but also a community standpoint, to have somebody who's sort of the forefront person and athlete that has to go out and represent our club. And now it's just a matter of the fact that we've got quite a few guys that we think can handle that distinction and honor. It's not meant to be offensive against other teams, but I do think it's a little bit different in Toronto, as I think maybe it is in Montreal or with the Rangers or various different teams. Detroit, because of the history of their captains and how great they've been, would be another one where, you know, it's not something where if you do it and it's a mistake, you can just change it and nobody will talk about it or notice. It's going to be a big deal. So I think we have to get it right, and we have great candidates, so we're just taking our time. Much to the chagrin of some.
Well, for someone as analytical as you are in terms of using analytics and math and science oriented, mm-hmm. I've been so impressed with how open-minded you are and willing to mm-hmm. grow or, you know, mm-hmm. change your mind with, you know, evidence to back it up. So it's been so interesting to chat with you.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you so much for doing this.
No
Can we
problem.
Do it again?
Sure.
Wise beyond his years, you have to think Toronto is in good hands with Kyle Dubas, and we appreciate him being here with us. We thank you for listening. Feel free to rate and review the Executive Suite. Any feedback is much appreciated. We are free to subscribe. But be sure and check out the other shows on our NHL Podcast Network. The Great One-on-One with Wayne Gretzky. If you've got a fantasy team, if you're a fantasy player, we've got NHL Fantasy on Ice. And Dan Rosen is always on top of what's going on. Everything you need to know from around the NHL is on NHL at the Rink. So thanks for listening. Until next time, I'm Deb Placey in the NHL Executive Suite.